Hey, y'all. When the polls close on Super Tuesday, join the Jasons and the whole WFAA team for a one-of-a-kind look at how Texans voted. Download the WFAA Plus streaming app on your smart TV to watch their Election Night Results Special, Tuesday, March 5th. Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
All right, hey, everybody. We are back for another week of Y'allitics, and you can keep the sunglasses on.
I should take
them
off, probably, right?
Keep them on.
I didn't realize that.
We've stepped out. We haven't gone far this time, but we had to get out of the office.
Right.
It's a nice day, or at least we said that before we came outside. Here we are in February. It's, what, 80 degrees today?
80 degrees, man.
I'm not ready for this.
You and me both.
Is it too early to complain about the heat?
Oh, yeah. It's Texas, though, right?
Yeah, but we got a couple of cold ones here today. We stopped at a legendary place
in Dallas
called Fuel City. It's just in the shadows of downtown right there on Riverfront. And it's very well known. It's like they used to have steers out there. Do you remember that? I don't know if they still do.
Yeah.
Oh, they're still there?
The Longhorns are still there?
Yeah. Daryl says that the Longhorns are still there outside. They've got a little bit of property there right by the Trinity River. And yeah, a bunch of gas pumps, car wash, et cetera. It's sort of like a Buc-ee's before, I guess, Buc-ee's became a huge thing.
Right. It's kind of like the local Buc-ee's for North Texas. They're all over the place. I think there's, what, almost a dozen of these fuel cities.
Yeah, and so, they're known for their tacos.
They are, and that's what you left out. Here's two things. So we splurged for some some imports this week because of the topic we're on. So we have Victoria beer, but here's what I found out. So we're eating the tacos here next to the Loud Road next to us.
Yeah.
And I just discovered that the ride on the money guy never carries cash, which is phenomenal to me.
I think I have one emergency dollar in my car, and that's it.
So like, guess who bought the tacos? It wasn't this guy right here.
Apparently it's smart not to carry cash because somebody else buys. It's a cash-only operation for the tacos there, and I'm having a quesadilla. You're having some tacos. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, a ding on me for not having cash. A ding on Whiteley, though, because we would have recorded this at Fuel City, but we saw the sign there that said it's a misdemeanor to consume alcohol on the premises. And Whiteley says, well, I mean, what do you think? What do you think? And I go, well, I mean, it doesn't matter. It's not a matter of not getting caught, and it's not a matter of, you know, like, are we doing the right thing or the wrong thing? We would actually be recording ourselves breaking the law, which is never smart.
Yeah.
No, even though it's just a misdemeanor.
I was thinking, like, do we sit in the car or do we do something else?
I think that's still considered on the premises.
Right.
And you might be breaking a different law if we're both, you know, sitting in a car drinking.
Open containers, exactly.
So to the patio at work it was, and we're both having Victoria, which is...
Hecho in Mexico.
Hecho in Mexico. Yeah. I don't know what state that's made in there. I didn't look. At any rate, imported, though, out of Chicago. Interesting. Okay.
Never mind, it's right across the border. But my guess is this was driven across the border, and that's exactly what our podcast is about today.
Absolutely.
I think this is phenomenal what happened. Everyone's heard of Laredo. It's a busy port, as always. The Port of Houston's a busy port. The inland port in North Texas, just south of Dallas, is a busy one.
Mm-hmm.
But no one quite realizes today how busy Laredo is. They are importing more. The value of imports coming through Laredo is more than anywhere else in the country. That's phenomenal to me. Long Beach, New York, Houston, Seattle, you name it.
Yeah, you're used to seeing those huge cranes at the seaports in places like Long Beach and LA. Port of Laredo blows that away in terms of value traded this past year. And I mean, you know, this isn't a huge port there in Laredo. But last year, Port of Laredo saw $320 billion in trade going back and forth. The next closest one was Port of Los Angeles, which was at like $298 billion. So the Port of Laredo bested Los Angeles by 20-something billion dollars. It just gives you an idea of the staggering amount of stuff that's going back and forth across the Texas-Mexico border. It's that other thing that's coming across the Texas-Mexico border. We've been inundated lately, of course, you know, heading into primary season with all these ads, all these news reports of, you know, the immigration there along the border. This is the story that rarely gets told, though, of the other stuff that's coming across.
And, you know, this is not an economics podcast here by any means. This is a political podcast, and the politics around this is exactly what we're talking about today. So, you know, the Republicans have successfully made the border their number one issue for 2024. It was for 22 and 20 and previous years as well. But more than ever before, the political attention right now is on the border and the number of people coming across who are undocumented, not necessarily asylum seekers, but people who do not have permission to be here and they're coming across.
Yeah.
So,
and this has caused some friction too.
It's caused a lot of friction.
Politically.
The other big thing that we're going to discuss here is that Mexico now for the first time has leapfrogged Canada and China, not as Texas's number one trading partner. It's been, Mexico and Texas have had, you know, number one status with each other for a long time. For the United States.
Yep.
For the United States. So here we are with, you know, Mexico bringing so much value, so many jobs, and so much money to the wallets of Texans and Americans. And it's also the boogeyman in politics.
So it's sort of this tightrope that has to be walked, and there's no one better to talk to about this than Dr. Ray Perryman with the Perryman Group in Waco, I believe is where they're situated, because lawmakers in this state read the stuff that Ray Perryman and the Perryman Group puts out. They look at this stuff when they're in legislative sessions, and it actually, I think, influences some of the legislation that they work on and some of the policies that they craft. So his stuff is very credible, very widely watched, and we got Ray Perryman on the line. He's a busy guy, too, so thankfully he set aside like 25 minutes for us. And we got him on the line to talk about the significance of the numbers that we're seeing and, you know, how that plays out for all of us and what it means for politics here in Texas.
Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting. For another smart conversation on Eolitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
So, Dr. Perryman, thanks so much for being on here with us and for putting this in easily digestible reports for us to figure out this huge impact.
Oh, my pleasure. Happy to be here.
So I wanted to talk to you about this Forbes headline that I saw a couple of days ago. It said, U.S. does more trade with Mexico in 2023 than any nation ever. I mean, that's pretty substantial when you start talking about that. Texas and Mexico have always been top trading partners with each other, but now Mexico is the U.S.'s biggest trading partner and record-setting so.
That's right. It's the biggest issue we ever had with any country. And historically, Mexico has been, Canada's been first, China sometimes is first. Usually Mexico, China, and Canada were always the top three, but Mexico had never been the top trading partner before for the U.S.
So, Ray, how did that happen? How did Mexico leapfrog ahead of the other two?
Well, I think a couple of things happened. Number one, obviously, China's had some economic difficulties, hasn't really solved some of their supply chain issues, and they've had some challenges in their economy, and so that theirs has slowed down to some extent. But and then basically, Mexico has just continued to grow. The development, cross-border development of manufacturing firms and that sort of thing's continued to expand. A lot of people don't realize it, but it's quite common to see goods passed back and forth four or five times during the production process as part of it's produced in the United States, part of it's produced in Mexico and that sort of thing. And people don't realize just how integrated these two economies really are.
Well, how much has the Chinese nearshoring had an impact on this too? Are Chinese moving their plants closer to us over here and still, you know, really wielding their influence?
There's a certain amount of that going on. There is some nearshoring of that type going on. We're also seeing nearshoring of other Asian countries bringing plants to Mexico as well as a few European countries, but primarily from Asia. But we are seeing that, and that does have some impact on it. I think you'll see more of that later. That process is really kind of in its infancy, but it has started to some extent.
Yeah, because, you know, these other countries like China, for example, you know, they're dealing with tariffs if they try to trade directly with the U.S. from China. But if they can open up a factory in Mexico, they can stamp it with made in Mexico and still be able to get in without having to deal with those tariffs, correct?
That's right. Most goods don't have tariffs flowing back and forth between the United States and Mexico, thanks to first NAFTA and then subsequently the USMCA. We basically have free trade with Mexico, which is and Canada, which is very positive for the economy.
I want to put some numbers on this here too. I think $471 billion in gross product for between Texas and Mexico, and 3.6 million jobs. That's a tremendous amount. When people talk about Mexico today, it's all mired in politics and what's happening on the border. But a lot of people are making money off of what's going on back and forth across the Rio Grande.
Yeah. Well, Jason, that's one reason we decided to put these numbers together, was to kind of give people a perspective on that. I mean, you're looking at, there's basically 13, 14 million people working in Texas right now. 3.6 million of those jobs are directly or indirectly tied to the fact that we trade with Mexico. I mean, that is an enormous source of manufacturing. It's an enormous source of retail and distribution and many other factors in our economy. And I think people, one reason we put these numbers together was just kind of remind people that there's a lot going on right now, but don't lose sight of the underlying economics of all this.
Yeah, and you put a fine point on that, too, in the report. You said about, and this is a staggering thing to wrap your head around, about 25% of all activity in the vast Texas economy, 25% of it is tied to interactions with Mexico directly. That's pretty stunning.
It is stunning. It really is. And obviously that involves the entire supply chain and everything, but it's a huge impact, and it's developed over a long period of time, and beginning with the maquiladora programs almost 50 years ago, where we could begin to bring parts of goods back and forth across the border, the assembly process, and take advantage of the strengths of both countries. And then, of course, being accelerated with the subsequent trade agreements. And then just the overall just growth in the Texas economy itself has created a lot of opportunities for this type of dynamic expansion. You can go back to things like the Toyota plant in San Antonio, one of the key, which really brought Texas out of the doldrums in terms of economic development a number of years ago. One of the key things driving that was the fact that so many component parts could be produced in northern Mexico.
I want to loop back to something that Jason just touched on a moment ago, and that you were responding to, and just wanting to put this report out, you know, in light of what's going on down at the border. You wanted to put this out to show that, hey, there's a lot of benefit to, to these two countries having good ties here. When you say that, you know, obviously, you know, people like us are going to read this. Maybe some lay people will come across this on the internet and read it, people who are interested in business. How much of it was you trying to put this out there also for lawmakers as we, you know, get ready to go into an election season here and then another legislative session here in Texas in this next year?
Well, I didn't really start out with that type of agenda. I mean, we put out a lot of information for people and put out a lot of information that we don't charge anybody for, like this, just for public benefit. Obviously, I've been doing this a long time, and lawmakers do read a lot of our stuff, and I do get a lot of calls from them and contact from them and that sort of thing.
From both sides of the aisle, too, yeah.
Absolutely, both sides of the aisle. That's the way we like for it to be. In fact, a column just not long ago wrote a column and called me an equal opportunity offender. I guess that's a good thing.
These days it is.
You know what I like about the report here is that you don't sidestep the politics of what's going on down there. Sure, you talk about the huge economic benefits between the two countries, but you do talk about what's happening at the border, the current political situation down there as well. And you note the inefficiencies that has resulted in from the imports and the exports back and forth across the river there. And you talk about how this has led to notable economic losses. Slowdowns led to a loss of $1.6 billion in output and about 16,000 jobs. That's a lot to me.
And Jason, that was just in the border region. We measured those numbers just for the border region because that's where we had enough data. We felt like we could adequately measure that. I mean, that's a huge impact when you're talking about the Texas border region. And absolutely, that's caused by a lot of the inefficiencies. And we didn't try to assign it to any one particular thing or anything like that. But it's just the overall process that's going on there that's slowing things down. I think there's plenty of blame to go around for everybody on that one.
Well, you know, it does sound like a lot, but politically, this issue is still red hot. At what point does the table turn and the weight shift to, okay, politics is great, and this is really helping me out with whatever I'm doing politically, but this is also costing people jobs, and it's costing a lot of Texans in their wallets?
Well, hopefully what we can do with this type of information is help to get that narrative out there and change that narrative. I mean, in addition to releasing the the blast that we did that you guys saw. You know, I did my syndicated column on the topic. We did our, I did my daily radio show on the topic. I mean, we're doing what we can to try to just remind people that there is a lot at stake here, and in finding some real solutions and some workable solutions, and sort of trying to put the politics aside. I mean, both sides are trying to do various things in this, I think, with some politics involved, no question. But there's very real economic activity at stake here.
Yeah, when you start talking about the politics of this, is this more complicated than it has been in the past, or is it more fraught than it has been in the past? You've been looking at these Texas-Mexico trade numbers since before NAFTA. And I mean, that almost sounds prehistoric these days, because we've got the USMCA now. We had NAFTA for many years before that. And I'm not aging any of us by saying that. But you've been doing this for a very long time. Are the politics more fraught now than they've ever been, or is this sort of business as usual?
Well, what's happened is, what we haven't had in the past is this mass immigration, primarily from Central America. We haven't had that historically. And frankly, I don't think anything either party is doing right now is going to do a lot to solve that problem, because I think what we're going to have to do, and it's difficult and it's controversial, but what I think we're going to have to do is help those countries solve their problems. I mean, I put myself as a parent and a grandparent. If I had a kid who was living in a country that's had an 8-year drought, that's an agrarian country and on the verge of starving to death, or a kid who's in a country overrun by gangs that are killing kids right and left, and I have a choice of living in that environment or trying to get out of that environment, the motivation to get out of that environment transcends economics and everything else. And if you get to the border, you don't get in, you go back the next day, you face the same choice. And I mean, I think we're going to have to address the problems in those countries and try to help get something there, because most people would like to stay where they grew up and stay where they live. I mean, most people aren't looking to move to a different country, but they're under a situation where they feel like they have no choice. And I think we're going to have to address that problem, which neither party is really honing in on that right now.
Well, not to date us again here, as Wheeler said, but I mean, you know, we've seen administration after administration going back to the 80s, probably a lot further than that, try to address the you know, inequalities in a lot of these places, the economic inequalities. And it just hasn't worked, Republicans and Democrats over the years. How do you think this is going to end, this whole red hot political situation along the border?
Well, it has been difficult over the years. You know, President Reagan had some fairly significant initiatives on this. President Johnson had some fairly significant initiatives on this. I mean, it goes back a long way, and people have been trying to address this type of issue. I think I think in this situation, I think what has brought it to a head, and is, as Jason was saying, brings it to the to a higher level, is the sheer volume of the influx that's happened, hopefully is enough of a wake-up call to make us see we really are going to have to do something to make it where these people feel like they have a choice. I mean, I think that's their biggest issue right now. It's nothing we're doing at the border is making their choice that they face the next day at home any better. And that's why I think, again, the politics has gotten crazy, and there's a lot of back and forth and people making political hay out of it. But I think they're all trying to deal with the problem at the wrong place. I mean, I don't think the border is a place you can deal with the problem. You have to deal with it before it gets to the border.
Yeah, you know, López Obrador, the current president in Mexico, has not been shy with his criticism of Governor Abbott here in Texas. You know, there's no love lost there. I'm curious, you know, when you get to that point where there's sort of some pot shots being taken back and forth and the rhetoric seems to be heating up, is this, you know, economic powerhouse along our border here, this trade back and forth, is it such a machine that it can sort of keep on rolling no matter what that's like, and if some policies are instituted and that sort of thing? Or is it possible to spoil, you know, what has been very, you know, very much responsible for the so-called Texas miracle?
Well, it would be hard to spoil it. I mean, because it has been integrated very significantly over a period of decades, but certainly you can impact it and impact the extent to which it can grow and that type of thing. And there's just so many issues here. I mean, for example, the busing issue. Busing has been a big part of migration for years. But how it's normally happened is a family comes across the border, they have a relative in another state, and they try to get a bus ticket to go start a life. And sometimes governments have subsidized those, and that's actually worked pretty well. The difficulty is when you just put a group on a bus and don't announce where you're going and that type of thing, and people don't have the advance warning or the mechanisms to take care of them, is where it gets to be a problem. But dispersing this around the country has been, part of immigration, effective immigration strategy for many years. It's just the way it's being done in this hot political environment right now that makes it difficult. But again, I don't think that it's likely to totally derail the trade. But we've already seen these slowdowns do have an impact. As I say, we measured the one in the border at over $1.6 billion in output so far in the border, 16,000 jobs in that region. I mean, that gets to be significant pretty quickly.
Ray, you do put out a lot of data that you don't charge for. We appreciate that. Our budget's pretty slim here at Yolitics. but what's your message to Texans on this issue? My last question here for you. What do you want to tell Texans when it comes to this?
Well, I think a couple of things. First of all, we've had a longstanding history of immigration back and forth from Mexico, and we actually rely on that workforce. The workforce, the people who come from Mexico, who live in Mexico, who come to work, are basically about 10% of the Texas workforce. It's 40% of our construction workforce. It's 40% of our agricultural workforce. It's 30% of our hospitality workforce. We don't have an economy without those folks. The trade is very important. And I think this other issue, I wish we could just step back from the economics and the politics and really look at it from a humanitarian perspective, because I think that's the only way we're ultimately going to solve this, is to recognize we have to do something that makes it not imperative for these people to try to get here. And the problem starts and should end well before it gets to the border.
Well, I think it's stunning when you put it into context like that as to how many of those crucial jobs are being performed by people who have been coming across. Have you heard from any lawmakers after putting this out by chance?
Let me think. I don't think I've heard from anybody specifically about this one. It would be more likely that would happen during a session or something like that.
Or maybe after this podcast is.
Should we get somebody on the line here? We can bring somebody up here if you want us to.
Certainly after this podcast. So I don't need any help, guys.
My last thing for you, Ray, is at this point, this obviously benefits both sides. Who needs whom more? Is there one side that needs the other more at this point? And is that in jeopardy of changing at any point?
Now, are you talking about politically or?
For this trade, I mean, this trade is benefiting both sides. Is there one side that needs the other more?
Well, the trade is clearly benefiting both countries tremendously. And Texas is actually a net exporter to Mexico. And so we get more net benefit if you just take the dollars and cents of it. Mexico is not as rich a country as the United States and not as prosperous a country. So obviously the importance to Mexico, particularly to northern Mexico, is probably in relative terms a little more important, but it's vital. I mean, when you stop and think about it, I mean, we're talking about 8 million jobs in the United States. You know, we have 150 million or so jobs. That's a big chunk. You're talking about, you know, again, a quarter of the economic activity in Texas. These are very, very big numbers. And I think both countries have strong case and strong need to keep the trade vital and keep the trade efficient and keep the trade growing.
But Dr. Perryman,
before we let you go, you know, Wheeler's question led to one more here.
This always happens, by the way.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm sure you're seeing the ads and probably getting the mailers and the text messages, these political things right now leading up to March 5th. When you see all this noise about the border, what's your reaction as a Texan, as somebody who studies this?
Well, I wish we could get away from it. I mean, I wish we need to be focusing on really solving the problem. And again, I'm not a legal scholar. I'm not any of those things. But to me, regulating our borders almost has to be a federal function. I mean, I stop and think about how would we have a country if every state had different rules about immigration and that sort of thing.
So it's being tested, though.
Yeah, I know it's being tested. And that kind of, I mean, I think about that, but I wish we could divorce it from the politics and get back to the real issues and try to solve this and help the people who are being hurt by it, as well as help the economy assure that we can grow and prosper. There's major investments looking at improving infrastructure in Eagle Pass right now and that sort of thing that need to go forward, that need to happen, private capital that wants to come in there. There's all sorts of things that could really improve the trade situation dramatically if we could solve those problems. So when I see that stuff, I mean, and I see, you know, you see it from both sides of different things, but I hate to see it come down to those kinds of issues and those kinds of sound bites and that sort of thing that I don't think really help us solve the problem from either side.
Dr. Perryman, thanks for taking the time to walk us through this. Thanks for putting this report together. I think that it's something that Texans should read. I mean, it's a huge impact on this economy here. And again, after, you know, as Jason was saying, we've all been seeing those ads and getting those mailers. It's important to remember the other stuff that's coming across that border too every day and what it's doing for this state.
That's exactly right. Yeah, appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, y'all, the conversation doesn't stop here. Find us on Twitter and Instagram. We're at Yolitics.
So Ray Perryman, really giving us sort of the master class in what the numbers are looking like. I didn't mention, and you know, both of our hometown, sort of, I mean, you adopted it as a hometown, Houston. Houston leads the country as of 2023 in tonnage. So Port of Laredo leads in value of trade. The Port of Houston leads in tonnage of trade. And you know what? All that stuff arrives in both of those places, and then guess what? Those trucks make their way through the state, and I did a piece on this several months ago. They sort of project out what these arteries are going to look like in Texas, and I mean they just get bigger and bigger as the years go because we're going to see more and more of this truck traffic.
Our freeways are getting bigger and bigger.
Absolutely.
In the future?
Well, yeah, that's at least what the projections say. I don't know if it's really true.
Wow.
And that's why you see all these warehouses popping up too, because all that stuff's got to be stored before it's sent out to other places.
So then now's the time to be in the warehouse business.
Absolutely. Not a bad place to be.
It's fascinating to pull the politics out for a moment and just look at the raw numbers here and what Mexico means. And a lot of folks want to make Mexico out to be the bad guy here, that Mexico's not, you know, could be doing more to prevent the flow of humanity coming north to
their
country.
We have seen a little bit of a change there, though, in the last month or two.
We have, but just like the president of Mexico said recently, no one's going to stop migration.
No.
Put as many walls and fences, rivers, whatever you want there, it's not going to stop.
Go anywhere in the world. They're dealing with this anywhere in the world.
But to see what Mexico means to Texas and to the United States, to jobs in Texas, 16,000 jobs impacted because of the politics on the border. Created by and impacted, because the inefficiencies.
Yeah, you're right. That's right. They're taken away, actually.
But the millions of dollars that our politics is stopping in trade and the imports and exports.
Because of the slowdowns that happened. It really is fascinating. We hope that you got as much out of this as we do. I just thought this was extraordinary when I saw these numbers, and I thought, we got to get Dr. Perryman on, and thankfully he took our call there.
Right.
Hey, listen, we know that we've got the big election coming up, speaking of the border, because that's what all those commercials and ads are about right now. Wherever you are in Texas, if you want to see the best coverage on election night, Super Tuesday, the primary, March 5th, we've got the place for you. This is a place that even the lawmakers, we hear it all the time from lawmakers in Austin, that this is what they watch on election night.
Right.
And if you've got a smart TV and you can put apps on your smart TV, like you can put YouTube on there or any of those sorts of things, look on there for WF as in Frank, AA, WFAA Plus, okay? And get that app on there. We're going to be on that app on election night, Super Tuesday, March 5th, starting just before the polls close at about 6:45, 6:50 p.m.
Yeah.
And we'll take you all through the night, and we're going to cover everything.
And we're covering all things Texas. So, you know, on election night, a lot of times people go to maybe one of the cable networks or one of the national networks. They cover the national view. We're covering Texas only, breaking down the vote in all 254 counties to see how these races are going to go, the Republican race and the Democratic race as well.
Well, actually, it's almost the Republican race, and the Democratic race.
Yeah.
Because there's some fractures
two
in the
Republican
parties
right now.
And it's going to be really interesting on election night to see, you know, this horse race, like which side of the party or which, you know, main politician, because you've got Governor Abbott, endorsing some people, and that's at odds in some cases with, you know, Ken Paxton's endorsement of some people. It's going to be an interesting night to see where the party goes from here.
And to see what the party looks like at the end of the day after, March 6th. So WFAA Plus, you can watch the live stream of all Texas results, and that is on Apple TV, it's on Roku. Amazon Fire. And then to watch any of these episodes that we record, next time we might be a little quieter, hopefully somewhere it's a little cooler as well, that's air conditioned. But you can watch these anytime on YouTube. They come out Wednesday morning, and our podcast, as always, comes out on Sunday morning.
We better get out of here before this big truck goes by here.
Rough.
I know of one viewer who's going to be really not happy about this noise. She works with us. Yeah. She's one of our big bosses.
We've had her on before, and why she lets us continue this podcast.
She hates the noise in the background. Or maybe it's the noise in the foreground. Yeah,
maybe it's us.
Maybe it's us.
Who knows? Thanks so much for watching. Thanks so much for listening, as always, to Yalitics. We appreciate it. And get ready for Election Day. Don't forget, you can still go vote up until Friday, the 2nd of March.
Yeah, early. And then you can vote, of course, on Election Day. Yep. And then, again, WFAA Plus on Election Night.